Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
This is how we do it.
My favorite time of every Thursday with one of my favorite people, Leroy mustn't hear this. Sheldon Rochelieu is in the house.
Hi, Thando Kuhle.
It's time for music. It's the music feature.
It's time for the music. We have to call in the weekend with some jams.
We do. Yeah. How has your week been?
It's been cool. It's been a cool week. And now we're here.
We're bringing in the weekend. So tell us, what are we speaking about today?
So I wanted to talk about the art of listening to music.
Yeah.
I find that most people are passive music listeners. And they don't actually actively listen to music. And what I mean by that is, like, a lot of people will turn on the radio and they just listen to music in the background.
Or they're just dancing.
Or they're just jamming, just whatever. And they're not really actually listening to the music. Consuming it. Like, understanding the nuance. Yeah. Like, what was the composer doing? And there's so many different ways to consume music. So, for example, if you're listening to an album, you will consume it completely differently as opposed to listening to a single or watching a song through a music video or watching music live. And you'll find that people will have different reactions to music depending on how they are consuming it.
Yeah.
Like, for example, if you're listening to an album, it's a longer form. So you're listening out for the nuance of, like, the transition between one song to the other. And what does that artwork look like? For example, with me, I'm a very active listener. So when I listen to an album, I'm listening out for, what are those transitions between the songs? What is the art that the artist is trying to create? Because for me, listening to a song in isolation versus listening to a song within the context of an album, it's like looking at the Mona Lisa, but you're only looking at the eye and not the whole artwork.
But isn't this because you're a music doctor?
Of course.
I'm joking. No,
it is. It's because I'm a music nerd.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
But I also feel music, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you love a song because of what it says.
Exactly. And sometimes, have you ever heard about, like, people talking about how they heard the song on the radio, but and then they watched the music video and they were like, oh my goodness, I get it.
Yes.
Like, I get it, because when I was just listening to it, I didn't get it. But I watched the video, all of a sudden,
I get it.
And it's also like listening to the music in the context of a movie versus in the context of a musical. And then outside of that, like, sometimes you'll listen to that song, it's from a movie, and then you listen to it outside of the movie and it doesn't really make any sense.
Totally.
And then you watch it within the context of a movie and you're like, oh my goodness, it makes so much sense. I'm moved by this. Because music is contextual. And so the first song that we listened to is Killing Me Softly.
By
Fugees. The Fugees.
Yeah.
With Lauryn Hill on lead vocal.
Can I just say I love Miss Lauryn Hill.
We love Lauryn Hill.
I'm a huge fan of her.
And it really saddens me that we've only really got about 4 albums off this very long career.
Only 4.
Yeah, like 2 with the Fugees and then 2 as a solo artist. And that's it. That's all we've got.
Yeah, but those songs have been playing.
I mean, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill is one of the most iconic albums.
They just never get old.
Never. Oh. And so when you listen to this Fugees, Killing Me Softly, the original was performed by a woman called Laurie Lieberman. She wrote the song. And I don't know if you know this guy called Don McLean. He was a very famous folk artist in the 1960s. He wrote a song called American Pie. All right. He wrote a song called American Pie, and he also had a famous song called Starry, Starry Night. Actually, it was called Vincent. And he was a very famous folk singer. And the one day, Laurie Lieberman walked into the Troubadour, which is a very iconic club in the United States, and she heard him performing.
Did he sing that song? I actually love that song. That Starry, Starry Night.
Yeah. Starry, Starry Night.
I love it.
Yes, that's Don McLean.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so Laurie Lieberman walked into this Troubadour and Don McLean was performing on stage, and she was inspired to write Killing Me Softly.
Mm.
And she was like, strumming my pain with his fingers. Da, 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 da.
I'll let you sing that.
And so she was inspired to write the song. But just watching the guy performing on the stage. Anyway, she got home. She laid it all down, whatever. Eventually released it. And the song just didn't go anywhere.
Okay.
A few years later, Roberta Flack was in an airplane and she was listening to the onboard radio station and she heard the song by Laurie Leibovitz. And she heard the song and she was like, this song is brilliant. She immediately took out a piece of paper and she started rearranging and recomposing the song.
Mm-hmm.
When she got off the plane, she phoned Quincy Jones and she's like, dude, you need to connect me with the people who wrote this song because I want to do it. And she completely altered the song. She sped up the tempo. She altered some of the chords and made it the song that we know. That was in the 1973. And then in 1996, the Fugees took it. And they decided to add more of like a reggae beat to the song.
Yeah.
And then the hip-hop elements to the song. And once again, changed it. Now, in both of those times, the Roberta Flack time and the Fugees time, the song went to number one, which was a far greater success than the original version by Laurie Lieberman, which didn't do anything.
It was a hit.
And it's merely because of the context through which the audiences were listening to these songs. The song landed up winning 3 Grammy Awards. The Fugees won one for Best R&B Performance by a Duo Group. Then Roberta Flack won Best Female Pop Vocal Performance.
Wow.
And then the songwriters won Song of the Year in 1973. And then in 1999, it was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame as a song of significance.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you want to introduce our next song?
So our next song is If I Ain't Got You by Alicia Keys.
One of my all-time favorite artists as well.
I know. And such...
I'm an Alicia Keys fan.
Yeah, Alicia Keys is a phenomenally talented musician. She was a protege.
Mm.
Anyway, this song was included in her album called The Diary of Alicia Keys and was released in 2004.
Mm.
And the inspiration behind the song was the passing of Aaliyah in 2001. She was 22 years old. She was a rising star. She was massive. And then she passed away in an airplane crash.
We're really robbed of a talent there.
Super, super talent. Like an amazingly beautiful, talented woman. Unfortunately tied up with the R. Kelly situation at the beginning of her career.
Mm.
But... and at the same time, there was the Twin Tower bombing, which also occurred. And so Alicia Keys started writing the song. Basically, she was reflecting on life and thinking to herself, there are more important things than things.
Mm.
You know, like there are more important things in life than things.
Mm.
And sometimes the people... are the most important things in your life and you don't even notice because you're too busy doing work or you're too busy doing this or that or the next thing.
And you just overlook the important stuff.
The important things because you don't have your eye on the prize.
Mm.
Anyway, the song was redone in 2023 for Bridgerton and Alicia Keys redid it as a classical version so that it fitted in within the context of the movie and that gave the song a whole new life once again.
Point of View.
Sharing the rhythm and beat.
Maxwell.
Oh my gosh.
One of my favorite guys as well. I think I've been saying that your choice in song today. Amazing.
Thank you.
We're just talking about how, you know, these songs remind us of...
of our childhood.
Oh.
Yeah. This song was 1997. The original version of this Maxwell version of the song was released in 1997 on an MTV Unplugged album. So it was like this, MTV Unplugged was this massive thing in the 1990s where everyone was like going to MTV and they were doing their songs all stripped.
I was such a fan.
I loved MTV.
Me too.
It's like almost like today's, what is that, Tiny Desk.
Tiny Desk.
Yeah, it's like today's Tiny Desk. Yeah. But it was a little bit more grand. But it was the concept was that you'd play your song stripped down.
Mm.
Now, this song was originally released in 1989 and was performed by an artist called Kate Bush. A few years ago, she had a big revival with a song called Running Up the Hill, because it was in a television series called about the kids. What was it on Netflix? With the kids and the monsters and the... Oh, I forgot what the name of the series was. But she the song was on that TV series, and it just blew up, and Kate Bush was back like she never left. Anyway, so when she wrote the song, she wrote the song for a movie called She's Having a Baby.
Okay.
And in the scene where the song features, she was given the movie in advance, and she started composing the music watching the scene. And in the scene, this mother and a child, the mother's giving birth to a baby, and they are both at risk of dying.
Mm.
And she starts writing the song, but the song is sung by a woman, but it's written from the perspective of a man seeing this happening.
Oh.
So the husband is watching this birthing process and possibly losing the child and the mother, or one or the other, or both.
Mm.
Anyway, and she wrote the song, and it was written like note by note, beat by beat, to the scene that she was watching. Anyway, in 1997, Maxwell decides to release it, and the significance of the song completely alters, because now you are reflecting on the song from the perspective of the man singing it, because previously it was from the woman singing it from the perspective of a man, but now you've got a man singing it from the perspective of a man. So when you hear Maxwell's version and then that falsetto voice, you just feel the urgency of the message of the song.
How many guys can hit that falsetto voice?
Oh, it's beautiful. Oh. Beautiful. And that was what Maxwell gave us in the 1990s and the early 2000s.
Mm.
So our next song is, it's a jam. Actually, this should have been our last song. It's a cover version of a song that was originally performed by a band called La Belle in 1974.
Mm.
The song is called Lady Marmalade.
Mm-hmm.
And Lady Marmalade has got a line in it, which at the time, I don't know, I wasn't alive in 1974. But
you weren't?
No, I wasn't. No, I'm not that old. Mm. Although...
Would you be anywhere you are alive? You're alive 10 years later.
Yeah, oh, wow. 1984. Mm.
1983,
9 years later.
88.
Mm. Wow, okay.
Would you be anywhere, you're a baby?
So much, much later, actually. Yeah, I know, he's a youngster. Anyway, so in the song, she says, they say, "Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir," which means, do you want to sleep with me tonight? And this is in 1974, so it must have been super controversial. These three girls, they were called La Belle. The lead singer was Patti LaBelle.
Mm.
And the song went to number one. It was a massive hit for them. It made them like one of the hottest bands in the 1970s in the United States. Went to number one in the US, sold 1.2 million units. It eventually got inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 2003. It was then covered by the All Saints in 1999, went to number one in the UK. And then in 2001, it was included in a movie called Moulin Rouge.
Oh, I remember that movie.
Yeah, it was about the Moulin Rouge, which is basically a venue where these girls used to perform topless. Yeah. So, anyway, so the song was performed by... Well, produced by Rock Wilder and Missy Elliott. Missy Elliott features in the song.
Mm-hmm.
But then the performers in the song are Pink, Christina Aguilera, Maya, and Lil' Kim.
Mm.
Oh, and by the way, in the previous song that we listened, I'd never heard that version of If I Ain't Got You by Alicia Keys.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the male vocalist in that song was?
Who?
That was Usher.
Really?
Yeah, Usher and Alicia Keys, yeah. I'd never heard it before, but I was like, oh, this is interesting. But anyway, so the song was then released.
Mm.
But if you listen to the original Lady Marmalade and you compare it to the Christina Aguilera, Pink, Maya, Lil' Kim, Missy Elliott version.
Yeah.
Firstly, the setting of the song has been altered. So in the original setting, it's set in New Orleans. This version set in Moulin Rouge in Paris.
Mm.
The one is about these girls going on the town. This one is more these girls in this exotic dancer venue. And the way that it's performed, it's done in such a way that it actually comes across almost like a female anthem.
Love it.
As opposed to the original, which was just a party song, like a disco song.
Yeah.
And so the context shifted the significance of the song.
Mm. Hiya. Hiya, love. I was telling you off air that I can only hear Whitney.
You identify the voice.
Yes. You don't need to tell me Whitney Houston was in that song.
So that was Whitney Houston. Mm. 2019. It was released in 2019. Mm. And it features Kygo, who's a famous producer and DJ. The original version of that song was released in 1986 by an artist called Steve Winwood. Anyway, from his fourth album called Back in the High Life. So the song was written by Will Jennings and Steve Winwood.
Okay.
Backing vocals on the original version of the song was Chaka Khan.
Chaka Khan.
Chaka Khan on the original version. And Nile Rodgers, the guitarist, also features on the song.
Okay.
Iconic guitarist, Nile Rodgers. Anyway, so the original version is much, much slower than this version. And it's almost like an intentional, like, ballad talking about this high love, like a higher purpose. Mm. And then in 1990, Whitney Houston recorded the song, because obviously by 2019, Whitney Houston was long gone. Mm. She had passed away. And so the vocal was from 1990.
Oh.
That you hear on that track.
Mm.
And then Kygo decided, they found the song. It was actually a bonus track on a Japanese release of I'm Your Baby Tonight. And it was featured on that album. And then they took the original vocal and then they spliced it together and created this more like anthemic version of the song. Because the original is very 80s, very ballady. But this one's got a much more anthemic sound to it. And actually, Joe Biden used the song when he was inaugurated, well, when he won the election in 2020.
Mm.
And the song at that moment changed in significance from just a love song.
The meaning changed.
Yes, the meaning changed from just a love song to a song about hope, healing, and unity.
Mm.
And merely because of the context under which the song was released.
Mm.
The interesting thing is that, and the sad thing is, like, towards the end of Whitney Houston's life, although she was still recording music, she was so sporadic and erratic in the way that she approached her art that they seldom were able to nail down a vocal from a session. So what would happen was she would go into studio and she would spend maybe half an hour, record some stuff, and then go back, then lose interest and leave, and then come back at a later stage and maybe record another half an hour. And so what the producers would often do, which is almost like a full circle moment with a specific song, is that they would take all the little bits, like the one words, the three words, the one bar, the two bars, and they would cut and paste them together to create a song, because that's how erratic she started getting towards the end of her life, which is such a sad indictment on such an amazingly talented vocalist.
She was amazing.
Amazing vocalist. The voice, this beautiful vocalist who got railroaded by drugs and what stardom implies in Hollywood.
What's the set next song?
So the next song that we have is a song by one of my favorite current vocalists, or like vocalists from the last 10 years. Her name is Cynthia Erivo.
Mm.
And she, if you look at her, you think like she's an alien. Because she's got like a very alien-like, she's got the bald head, and she's got the big nails, and she's very thin and a very small woman. But with this voice, like this most incredible voice. And one of my favorite performances was at the Kennedy Center Honors. I love watching Kennedy Center Honors. So in the United States, So in the United States, they've got this thing called the Kennedy Center.
Yeah.
And every year they do this thing whereby they will honor specific people from the arts world.
Okay.
So, like, it will be like an actor, a movie director, a singer, and a producer. Mm-hmm. So they'll have all four of them there. So it will be like Quincy Jones, Meryl Streep, Dionne Warwick, and whoever else. Or an artist could be like Keith Haring. So they've got all the people there lined up.
Yeah.
And then what they do is they've got a concert. And it's a whole week thing. And they get this medal from the Kennedy Center. On it's a gold medal, and it's on a rainbow ribbon.
Are they honoring them?
And they honor these people. And then they get like famous people. They'll get like Mariah Carey to come and sing. And usually if it's like a Carole King or someone famous as a songwriter, they'll get them to sing their songs on stage.
Yeah.
Like Aretha Franklin, you know, honored Carole King at one of these Kennedy Center honors. And one of my favorite performances was Cynthia Erivo performing Dionne Warwick's songs at the Kennedy Center honors.
Mm.
And I was, you watch Dionne Warwick watching Cynthia Erivo on stage. This small, tiny lady, she's wearing this beautiful gown. And she does this song, Elfie, which is an old song that Dionne Warwick sang in the 1960s from a movie called Elfie.
Mm.
And Cynthia Erivo goes up and performs the song.
Yeah.
And Dionne Warwick, you can see like the admiration, because artists admire other artists. Like if you're good, artists are very critical.
Do they admire?
Yeah, if you're good.
If you're good,
you have respect. If you're not good, they're going to.
But they're also critical of other artists.
Very critical. Yeah. So you see Dionne Warwick watching Cynthia Erivo performing Elfie.
Mm.
And you can see Dionne Warwick's like, there would never be a chance ever in my life that I would be able to perform that song like that.
Yeah.
Because Cynthia Erivo's voice is so massive. And she's become a very iconic singer and actress. Most recently, she was in the Wizard of Oz remake movie, which was the, what was it called? With Ariana Grande.
She wasn't an actress there?
Actress in the movie with Ariana Grande. What was the name of the movie? It's from a musical. Anyway, I forgot the name now. Today is not my day. I've run out of all my packages.
The bundles are
finished. All my bundles are done. They depleted. Anyway, but this specific song that we're going to play now is a song called... it's from a movie called Harriet.
Yeah.
And it's called Stand Up. You see, I told you.
It's Stand Up. You're
Stand
right.
Up.
Yeah.
And it's about... the movie is about this abolitionist called Harriet Tubman, who was a black woman who stood up against slavery in the United States.
Mm.
And this movie was iconic, but the song, you can hear the passion. And what I love about it is it was written recently, but it alludes to so much of the blues, which is where this movie originates from. And just listen to it. You're going to feel the emotion.
This is Kaya 959. We are rhythm and beat.
Woo, Sheldon.
Yo,
you have
Erivo.
Introduced me to something.
Yeah.
Yo, like Cynthia.
This little girl. I mean, she's tiny. She's a very. So the movie that I was trying to refer to was Wicked with Ariana Grande. But before that, she was in The Color Purple.
That's what I was musical. Saying, that I know her as an
you
actress.
You know her as a face, yeah.
Yes, I didn't know that she can sing.
Sing.
And sing so beautifully as
exactly.
well.
She's,
I mean, how many key changes were in that song?
At least three that I could count.
Oh, man, her music is beautiful.
Beautiful. And so she's actually from the musical theatre world. She's British.
Mm.
And she was in The Color Purple. Which I think is so amazing, because the original Color Purple, which was produced by Quincy Jones, later on was converted in 2005 into a musical, a Broadway musical. And interestingly enough, Oprah Winfrey, who was in the original movie, was one of the co-producers of the Color Purple. Of the musical, which is so interesting, because it was like a full circle moment for her, because The Color Purple helped launch Oprah's career.
Yep.
And like 20 years later or 30 years later, there she is being one of the producers of the show. So
yeah.
coming full circle.
Mm.
And this Cynthia Erivo has just impressed me so much. I mean, in Wicked, she's exceptional. And this yeah. voice and the attention to detail and the emotion. And with that specific song, I love the way that the song starts off with like these almost like field hollers at the beginning.
It
like
literally takes you with you
on a journey.
Yeah.
Like she's taking us to church.
She is.
Because then you convert and then it flips from like these slave chants at the beginning of the song to like a gospel choir halfway through the song, almost showing the evolution and the emancipation of the people from the slaves to the church, you know, like moving through. It's just beautiful.
Told a beautiful story through
song. Just through the music, not even necessarily through the lyrics, just through the movement of the music.
Yeah, and I love her voice. It's got so much soul.
Beautiful. And look, you could hear the very low notes in that register and then all the way up to the highest notes, just like a vast vocal register. Just a beautiful, beautiful singer.
The type of music I am here for.
We are all here for it. And we have to keep on listening out for Cynthia Erivo. I hope she's released one album, so hopefully there'll be another one in due course.
Is this her first?
This is not from an album. This is from the soundtrack for the movie Harriet. Yeah. So there is a whole album. If you want to go listen to it, you can stream it on Spotify.
Mm. What's our next song?
So our
this is our final
song. Our final song. So this is another... So in the last few years, there's been the rise of the bedroom recording artist. And especially with COVID, this was a big thing then, but there'd been the rise of the DIY musician even prior to COVID, but COVID really kicked it into high gear. With a lot of musicians not being able to access big recording studios, they were forced to produce their music in their bedrooms, and Billie Eilish is one of these musicians. Phenomenally talented, partially on the spectrum, but like super, super like in tune. Doesn't want to be a songwriter. She just wants to be a singer.
Mm.
Almost a reluctant star, like an anti-hero. But just the most amazing like way of interpreting music and working with music. Her and her brother Phineas, they write most of the songs together.
Mm.
He's the big brains, like he's the producer and the main songwriter, and the two of them write together. Now, this song that we're going to play for you is from a movie called Barbie. Now, a few years ago, the Barbie movie came out, and everyone was like, wrote it off as like, oh, just a frivolous, like, pink movie, like a movie about a doll, you know, a plastic doll. I went to go watch it, and I was pleasantly surprised that the message of the movie was about woman empowerment. It was about, like, empowering women and, like, showing that, you know, like, it's not just a pink doll, you know, like the pink doll is like a symbol of something more.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, I think women were relegated to just being like the peripheral figures in society.
Mm.
And in this movie, it shows women as the center of society. So it shifts the narrative from like peripheral characters, mothers that are taking care of children at home while their husbands are doing the work and bringing in the cash.
Yeah.
To the woman taking the lead role in the movie. And this song was written specifically for that movie, What I Was Made For. And when I originally heard the song, I did not hear it within the context of the movie whatsoever. I just heard it on the radio and I was like, yeah, this is a snooze fest. You know, like, what is this about? Like, I don't get it.
Mm.
Like, it's cute, but like, I don't get it. Then I watched the movie and you listen to the song and you think to yourself, what she's talking about is actually very significant. Like in the context of the movie, it's about this plastic doll.
Yeah.
What was I made for? You know, like I'm just a toy.
Mm.
And I think this is a topic with which a lot of people struggle with. It's like, I'm on this earth, I'm doing stuff. People are dying close to me, etc.
Mm.
What is my purpose?
What am like, I doing it for?
What am I doing all of this for? Like I'm slogging and I'm knocking myself out and I'm giving way too much to my employer. What am I doing this for?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you die, you go into a coffin, you leave it all behind. Who cares?
Yeah.
What are you leaving behind? What were you made for? And I think the significance is, like, sometimes you need to find your purpose. You know, what is the legacy that you're leaving behind? What are you leaving this planet with? And when I heard it within the context of the movie, I was like, damn, this is some deep sense. Stuff. It made a whole lot of sense. Yeah. Because I was listening to it from different eyes.
Yeah. Shal, thank you so much. We've come to the end of the show. It's been such an eventful week, you know,
yes.
Especially for me.
Yeah, so, yeah, shame, man.
Thank you, everyone, for welcoming me into your homes. Pamelo, hopefully, will have her voice back on Monday.
Exactly.
We will see you then at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.